Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is David Williams with episode 5 of the Great Planetary Peace Pilgrimage podcast to in January 22nd, 2022. This is to develop the idea of the Great Planetary Peace Pilgrimage as the most popular television show ever, based on the moving, staging, and encampment of a long-distance peace walk from place around the world, with popular public personalities showing up to lend their draw to the show on cameo appearances along the route, a stage every night with presentations and music and speeches and kitchens with international cuisine representing the different walkers from around the world, demonstrating how they can live in peace and share the message of peace and experience the message of peace by using and sharing different peace tools or toys, might look at it, like the tenting system, it's a human hive system, modular tenting system, the rainbow peace braids. It's a braid, six-strand braiding of three pairs of colors. And the message is you braid it with love, you make it with love. It stands for the message of peace. And when everyone has one, we'll have world peace. So this is a big deal. I have had this vision for a long time. I'm sorry my voice is funny. I should have been saying this before, but back in March, something happened, and I developed a speech impediment. I think it was too much smoking and oxygen deprivation or something. But I sound drunk, but I'm not. So my mind is sharp. I can type and everything, but my speech is funny. So bear with me. So since the last time, this is the fifth 2-hour podcast. I started, so 4 weeks ago, just introducing the idea that the concept of, as I shared with you here. And after that, the first week, I started having an idea where to go, what route to take to make a public peace walk that would be fun and enlightening and share the message of peace. And quickly, what happened was on the anniversary of Fuji Guruji's death anniversary on January 9th, 2018, I read a article saying how that mudslide on that date destroyed a statue in Santa Barbara called a Transformation of Forgiveness. And that struck a bell with me because I know Chief Crow Dog, who is the leader of a number of peace walks, like the Long Walk for Survival in 1980, when he met Guruji and did the pipe ceremony at the end of the walk in Washington, D.C. At Standing Rock a few years ago, Chief Crow Dog conducted a forgiveness ceremony. Number of military veterans who were repentant about the United States military involvement with the destruction of the native cultures and all that kind of thing, as well as war and so forth. So Crow Dog had a wonderful forgiveness ceremony. We touched the leaders' head and that kind of thing. So it struck me that this thing about forgiveness is a big thing for peace. Whatever side of the aisle you're on, Republican or Democrat, you have arguments, you think you're right, you're against child trafficking, and people don't know it exists, so they're against people that are fighting about it. All this division is going on. We have to have forgiveness to get to ground zero, to have peace as a concept. So when I saw this statue, I was moved. Frances Jensen, I saw her many years ago when she made this statue. It was at the Casa de Maria in Santa Barbara, where we had peace walks hosted. But the good thing is she made a duplicate in bronze and traveled around the country asking for forgiveness. And this one is called the Monument to Forgiveness, and it's planted in Oklahoma at the end of the Trail of Tears. So that's what developed since then. I think is that was the second week of developing like that. So I thought, well, that would be good place to walk from the end of the Trail of Tears back to Washington. And then in the course of the development, I've cut a plan together. I'm going to go over it chronologically, but what's happened in the interim is a couple of things new. One is the mayor of Santa Barbara, which I talked about her, Kathy Murillo, last time a lot, because she was the outgoing mayor. She participated with us in the Tree of Peace ceremony. The Tree of Peace is a symbol of the great love peace that the Iroquois Confederacy was founded on, and the United States system of government was largely patterned after this Iroquois Confederacy, but they left out the concept of the great love peace. That's what we're trying to bring back. The idea of the great love peace is the inviolably sovereign law of nature by which everything operates. And it's called many things and many ways, different traditions. The Hopi call it the law of nature. The Japanese Buddhists, Guruji's people, call it the Myoho in the Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Myoho means wonderful law. And in Judaism, it's talked about as the Torah, the law by which God even has to operate in the world and cannot contradict. And the Islam, the principle is the will of God. Same concept. Nothing can contradict the will of God. because it's inviolably sovereign. My work is in the science. I'm a chemist. I develop these equations I call Tetron Natural Unified Field Theory. There's a story behind it. Part, maybe I'll tell some of it this time. But from 1974 to 1977, I developed these equations after a year of thinking and a cosmic sound tore rock that I couldn't figure out. I just got it. And that led me to think of a trans time from the future. This is a signal I grabbed to help guide humanity to paradise on Earth. That's what I thought when I heard the sound of Toe Rock. Then in 1976, May 5th, pronouncing this sound, and I had an experience where I went to my meditation spot overlooking the ocean, and I pronounced the sound, and it came out Torakum, and I don't know why. So I asked around, and the people told me Torakum is Hebrew language, means the law stands up. So this inspired me to pursue this concept of defining the great law of peace, the inviolably sovereign law of nature, in the language of mathematics, as Einstein said, try to do, which he called unified field theory, means an explanation of this law by which everything operates, rendered in this mathematical symbols. Well, I don't want to belabor the physics and all that, but most of the physics people think that means something specific. But my view as a overall is that it has to do with how the mind works and how the light, the C squared, in E equals MC squared, the light is pegged in the of the observer, meaning all reality is relative to each observer. So I don't want to get into that deeply, but what I'm saying is I've looked at the broad spectrum, and I'm saying this law of nature is demonstrated, depicted in many different ways. Like Saint Nietzschean, I draw a parallel to Thomas Banyaka, the Hopi interpreter, because I have experience with both of them and the Hopi life plan that Thomas talked about, and it reflects the law of nature. Like Saint Nietzschean 700 years ago criticized the government of Japan because he said this, you're out of harmony with this natural law, and if you continue to make laws that contradict it, there's going to be problems like an earthquake and typhoon and all that stuff. And his predictions came true in his lifetime. And Thomas Banyaka kept talking about the law of nature, mind of man mirroring the law of nature, and even natural disasters will increase if our mind is out of harmony with nature. And we, he has said that in December 10th, 1992, the biggest rainstorm in New York history brewed out the window and shot out the electricity and the wind the next day, and the native people, 82, had the ceremony and finished the ceremony, and the lights went back on. So those kind of coincidences, to me, reinforced this key thing about the message of peace. It has to do with this inviolably sovereign natural law, and tied into that, the nature of truth, that the truth is not a made-up thing that people get, the get people to believe, and that makes it true, but there's an absolute nature to truth. So that's the message I want to bring out by having fun and doing the peace walk and beating drums and singing songs and all that. So I want to talk about our mayor was got a lot of accolades for her work as the mayor. And it's important to me, she came to pray at the Tree of Peace at UCSB with the Chumash elders and the Mayan calendar day keeper who's predicted the coming of the Mayan Renaissance this year in March, which will be a cosmic event to further peace, beginning of a global peace started last year. According to the Mayan calendar, the Jade Princess presentation of June 21st in the year 1444, the Jade Princess delivered a message from the year 2029, transmitted back in time to 1444, that world peace begins in 2021. So Jose Munoz, the Mayan calendar day keeper, had a ceremony on last December 21st to mark that beginning of world peace. Then this year, This is Mayan Renaissance in March, coincidentally culminating with the Lucidity Festival in Santa Barbara, which is kind of like what I envisioned the Peace Walk would be, a giant peace festival with entertainment moving place to place, kind of like a Lucidity Festival ongoing for a few months to way to Washington, D.C., to draw the people and produce a video around the world, people to see the people getting along, having fun, and the message of peace. That kind of thing. So that's why the schedule has, leading up to the schedule, I'm working on pre-production for 2 months. And the 1st of April is targeted to begin the process. That will be the same day that the President Biden's Secretary of the Interior has requested a report from all the Indian schools around the United States, what's happening with the Indians and the residential schools. Like in Canada, they're digging up thousands of bodies. And what she wants to know, what happened in the United States? Were the people, children killed? How did they die? She wants a report. See, you know, that's due on the 1st of April. Now, people think April Fool's Day is a joke day, but that when I looked into it, I learned that the original meaning is that the April Fool's Day, April 1st, is the day that people were to tell the truth, the complete truth, but that made a fool out of them. So what? That's where the concept of April Fool's Day was Truth Day, but you tell the truth to somebody, they don't like it, makes a fool out of you kind of thing. So while looking forward to this report, in Rosebud, South Dakota, the Carlisle Indian School, a bunch of the dead children were reburied with sacred honors in Rosebud, which is the place Chief Crow Dog has the Sundance. That's why we want to bring that message out in the context of the Indian school issues. So I'll go the highlights of my proposed schedule and add in new dimension. Reverend Yamato, longtime friend of mine since 1978, initiator of the Global Peace Walk in 1995, which I coordinated with some other people, but I was the main organizer, driving ahead every day and getting letters from proclamations from the mayors and getting the newspaper to come and cover the walk from New York to San Francisco to bring out the message of global peace now is universal human resolve, to bring out the message of the original message of the United Nations Charter, which is to remove the scourge of war from the future generations. How are you doing, UN? It's not happening. A scourge of war has not been removed. So we have to do something more radical. Every year, Reverend D'Amato has, since 1995, has done a peace walk from between Taos and Santa Fe. The reason is that when Taos, Leonard Peltier, the American Indian religious leader who's been imprisoned by the FBI, falsified evidence, still over 40 years in jail, because they won't give the judge a letter saying the FBI fabricated the evidence. Otherwise, if the FBI gives the judge, they let him out. I'm given to understand from 3 years ago. But Leonard Peltier, when we walked Kansas to Leavenworth, we fasted for 3 days praying for his release, and he gave us, I talked to him on the phone, asked him to make a message for the walk to carry, and he said he would. And the last thing he said on the phone was, give my love to the people. So that's what I've been trying to do and publish that message, give my love to the people. This guy should be not in jail. He's an American peace movement leader. He should be let out as an example of the correction of the United States government to accept the great law of peace, the law that they left out when they created the United States, which should have been included from the example of the Iroquois Confederacy, but it wasn't. This is a common teaching to all the indigenous cultures. That's just one that a big one that they point to. But anyway, and by coincidence, when the Wakatataus, we had support in advance, Yamato asked, what should we get the proclamation to say? And so the mayor of Taos, on the request, Taos is a global peace zone. That's a concept that Yamato initiated. We have several cities after that. San Francisco, a bunch of cities have proclaimed that town as the global peace zone. And Santa Fe, New Mexico also, as well as every year, Taos re-proclaiming it. So there was another time in 2000, we walked across country, delivered the message to the UN backwards from California. Okay, so this time I found out that Yamato is going to, with a bunch of other nonprofit organizations, he's going to do the Global Peace Walk on the same schedule, starting on April 8th, Buddha's birthday, the same day the Lucidity Festival starts in Santa Barbara. Maybe we'll have a communication, a Zoom meeting or some video connection, I don't know. But that ceremony he does is at the Rosario Cemetery, where the survivors of the Japanese concentration camp are buried. And every year he does the ceremony and walks to Taos for Earth Day and the ceremony there. This year, his friends, the event producer named Chaitanya, the son of Lucy, a wonderful lady in Santa Taos, he's promoting a walk for the water. So this is going to go beyond Taos to walk the Rio Grande to Creston and beyond to the headwaters of the Rio Grande with a few days of gathering at the end, as well as a gathering in Taos around Earth Day. And so my decision has been not to divert the focus for this leg of this attempt to produce the Great Planetary Peace Pilgrimage, the way to get the message out, I believe, is to focus on the freedom of Leonard Peltier. So I don't want to dilute that, but that's why I decided to continue with the plan. Our plan is April 1st, that day that the report is due. We'll walk from Santa Barbara City Hall to UCSB to the Eternal Flame Monument, which has a plaque and a quotation to Martin Luther King, John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy. All the leaders were assassinated with a government complicity that we know by now. And then we had instilled the Hiroshima peace flame on that monument in January 1990 with the Hopi interpreter and Mohawk chief Jake Swamp, who gave a message about the great law of peace and talked about the peacemaker. And we have a video called the Rainbow Uprising of Consciousness campaign. You can look on the YouTube, see a 2-hour edit of 20 hours of video, and including a half hour talk by actor John Voight talking about the Hopi prophecy that was later fulfilled after he gave the message about the House of Micah opening the door to the UN, which Amato did October 1991, I believe, yeah, and took Thomas to open the door. And in 1992, the elders got to speak to the General Assembly. And so that's the, okay. So the proposed schedule is April 1st, walk to the Santa Barbara to the Peace Flame at UCSB, and that'll be take most of the day. And then I think rest, and then next 2nd of April, walk from the Peace Flame, short walk across campus, repeat what we did in 1990, the other direction, ending at the Tree of Peace to bring out the message of the great law of peace with the global peace pole that's been consecrated at the Tree of Peace on the March 11, 2018, where the mayor, Kathy Mario, put the peace symbol representing the three faces of Jerusalem united in peace. She put that on the peace pole for Jerusalem. There's a total of six symbols and one more, the tetron symbol. My mathematical representation of this great law of peace as a seven symbol, which we installed on Gandhi's birthday in Anuskoyo Park with hanging up the stage of the Lucidity Festival stage, and Artsis Narrows, the Chirmesh elder, blessed the pole with his seven symbols of the message of peace from these different cultures, and it's to go to Jerusalem. This week I got a call on Facebook Messenger thing. I talked to Ibrahim Abu al-Hawa about he and the Jerusalem peacemakers. I think it was 2001, I organized a peace walk from Bethlehem to Jerusalem. I can go, but the Jerusalem peacemakers walked from Bethlehem to Jerusalem for peace that year, and we had a publicity, and my friends created a logo representing the three faces of Jerusalem united. It's the three symbols of the three religions superimposed in a peace symbol. And that's the one that Kathy Murillo put on it. And I told Ibrahim that I think she's the perfect person to travel as soon as she's able and willing to travel to Jerusalem to put the symbols on the peace pole at Ibrahim's house, which is the peace house. He welcomes everybody to come and stay with him and eat with his family and everything in East Jerusalem. I think of him many years as like the Muslim Gandhi of Jerusalem. And he works closely with Eliyahu McLean, also with the Jerusalem peacemakers. These people representing the three faiths of Jerusalem who all do ceremonies to bring each other together. Like the Guruji's followers, similarly to bringing out the teaching of Buddhism. So I talked to Ibrahim. He said he has a bunch of peace poles he's put around Jerusalem. Apparently it's one, may peace prevail on earth, the prayer for that group, many of them around the world. The organization behind that is following this movement, what we're doing. They're following it, have acknowledged the creation of the seven symbols, peace pole for Jerusalem. That means all the hundreds, thousands of these peace poles around the world are soon to be focused on this prayer as well. So I'm optimistic to the success of the possibility of a Mayor Kathy Murillo taking the peace pole to Jerusalem. It's with the message from the great law of peace from Santa Barbara and the Tree of Peace, details, explanations. You know, we have to make a video about it, telling it, details, all that kind of stuff, because it's not so simple to explain. Like Namo Myoho Renge Kyo was 2,200 years ago. The king of Ashoka, he conquered a whole Indian subcontinent through violent and bloody warfare. And then at a certain point, he accepted the message of peace. He renounced warfare and violence, built many peace poles symbolizing the message of peace to teach it to people. That followed 500 years of war, no crime, no violence anywhere in the area. That is what the message of Buddhism, this Namo Myoho Renge Kyo symbol, is about. And similarly, with the Great Law of Peace and the Iroquois Confederacy, where five warring tribes that were bitter warfare for centuries received the message of peace from the sky named the Peacemaker and renounced warfare and violence, planted the Tree of Peace, a symbol of the Great Law of Peace. They buried the weapons of war under it. That's where the expression bury the hatchet comes from. And that led to many centuries of peace and prosperity with over 100 indigenous nations throughout the eastern United States till the pressure European invasion started to mess things up. But there's two examples of precedent message of peace. Precedent cultures that happen by the people simply accepting the message of peace and changing their mind and bringing about peace. That's the precedent example we want to have today. You know, the Trump people and the Biden people have to bury the hatchet, make peace, recognize the inviolably sovereign natural law that everything operates by, and you can't make law against it. It's like if you make a law against the law of gravity, it's not going to work. It's going to reflect back in many ways besides hitting a rock, hitting on the head. But the destruction of nature, the environment, all the global warming, all this stuff has to do with the mind of man out of harmony with nature. We bring the mind of man into harmony with nature. We can not only bring peace, absence of war, but we can bring harmony to the natural world, to natural order. We can calm down all the natural disasters. That's not just my teaching, but I'm parroting that from the Hopi elders, Thomas Banyaka's, word for word. Example for example, what happened at the United Nations on December 10th, 1992 is a perfect example. The very day, the next day, he talked this message, same message as Saint Nichiren. You can't make a law against the law of nature, and if you do, it's going to create problems. And the example, Thomas Banyaka, where big rainstorm shorted out lights in the United Nations. Saint Nichiren has same example. He predicted the earthquake and a typhoon. The typhoon came and wiped out the Mongol fleet. This kind of power of nature is connected to the mind of man, and you can see it, you can feel it, you can understand it. That's what we want to bring out through what I call the Great Planetary Peace Pilgrimage. And many peace walks by many names. Now, I want to talk about Reverend Yamato because he's a very important personality in my experience. See, what happened was I was a grew up in the motion picture industry family. My father was an accountant, and the first half of his career was at Disney Studios, and the second half was Universal Studios. And when I was a boy, my name is David Crockett Williams Jr., and Davy Crockett was a big thing when I was a boy. And my dad has the same name. And Davy Crockett, the actor, Fess Parker, used to know my name, dad's name and all that. At Disney, everyone was friendly. The commissary of people ate together. My dad was a friendly guy. And so a bunch of his friends convinced Walt Disney to sponsor an explorer post for boys 14 to 18 years old to teach them how to make movies. So I was 4 years a member of the Explorer Post 25, where we learned how to make movies. And every Thursday night when my dad would take me to work an extra time and pick me up to Burbank to go to these meetings. And then on the weekends, summer, we had shooting schedules and all that. We made a Western movie. We edited it. We all had different jobs. The cameraman's son was the cameraman. The writer's son was the writer. That kind of thing. We took turns and learned the ropes. So when I was 18, last year, I was the president of the post. So we had to learn Robert's rules of order and how to handle the meetings and all that. So I have the experience from a long time ago in the motion picture industry to capitalize, to at least know what I'm talking about, what to do to produce what I'm talking about. But the idea of it being a peace walk came to me in 1977 when we did the walk from, after I met the Japanese monks in December 1976, my wife and I had gone to the Hopi land to explore the Hopi prophecy called Hopi Life Plan. That Thomas Bayaka invented the word prophecy to kind of frame it. But he came to Santa Barbara in May 28th, 1976, and he gave the same talk he gave on videotape a couple of months before, but in person. And the only time he looked at me in the presentation was when he said, "The Hopi prophecy explains that when he looked at me, he said, the true white brother will be coming to the Hopi land very soon and bringing many new inventions." And that's when he looked at me in the eyes. And it gave me chills because I knew this theory I was working on. I hadn't finished the equations yet, but I knew it was going to mean many new engines, like free energy to harness produce energy without fuel, how to make anti-gravity levitation vehicles, how to neutralize radioactivity materials, how to produce water from the airways kind of thing. These are ideas I put to writing in 1976. When I was in the Hopi land at the bicentennial year, 1976, when we went because of his talk in May 28th, preceded by about a month or so going to the Hopi land. By then, because he said my wife and I took the initiative, but she went along with me, that we were representing the man and the woman to represent human beings to go and explore this prophecy teaching. And because he said we had to wear red, we went to my alma mater, got two white and cotton lab coats, and was prepared to dye them red. But I got cold feet. After a week, we got the lab coats, but after a week, I got embarrassed. Who will people think I am, that I'm trying to do a prophecy? I was unsure of myself, but Carolyn believed in me, so I couldn't just say that I changed my mind. So I said, well, let's go to the San Francisco, and I'll go to the mountain top and pray for a sign. I need a sign from God, like Moses got the burning bush. I need a sign from God to do this. Otherwise, I can give it up. Otherwise, if I get the sign, I have to do it. I have to dye the lab coats red and go to the Hopi land and see what happens. Well, I walked up to the mountain and meditated and prayed. And I opened my eyes after a few minutes. A fire started at the edge of the San Francisco Bay and grew into a forest fire heading right to me. And I got ready to run. And the borate bombers came over and dumped the red borate solution all over the fire. So with that, my understanding, that's God speaking. That's how God works. That the law of nature works, that we're kind of coincidence. So I felt confident that I had to do it, come hell or high water or criticism or whatever. So we went to drive back to Santa Barbara to get ready, and her car locked up the transmission on Santa Cruz. We abandoned it and went to this place called the Catalyst and met a guy who is a religious studies student who took volunteered to drive us to the place, the All One Family Union in Harbin Springs, the Jonathan Damien's gathering, healing gathering, where we went on the summer solstice in 1976, just before the bicentennial 4th of July. We went there with this guy who is a religious studies major, just graduated. On their way, he told us the story of Buddha, which I didn't know, that he was a prince and gave it all up, became a renunciate and got a vision from his meditations. I didn't know all that, but he told us that story. And when we went to the gathering, we dyed the lab coats and a fire out. And when we drove to the Hopi land, so many miles, three or four times all the way, we pull off the road to have lunch or something, and there'd be a field on fire. Just arbitrarily, the fire sign was following us. The next thing that's happened, after we finished that adventure in the Hopi land, we came back, and the Thomas Brignaca came to Santa Barbara, and the fires followed him. And the place we were living in Banana Road burned all down, Dharma Home. And the Sunburst people, Carolyn was at the Sunburst community, and the fire sign followed us. So anyway, and I wrote my equations on the rock. on the 4th of July bicentennial, delivered that to Thomas, and then went to the Mennonite church and heard a story about Jesus Christ and what the prophecies were. And then the following weekend, the guy from the Rainbow Gathering came, all the revelations, prophecies, and this and that, he was my ear. I took him to the Mennonite church after we went to the Katina dances, where we saw the last Pope prayer, the morning Katinas, that came right between us when we were standing at the entrance way. We found out later these Katinas had sung this song, prayer song, for 4 days continuously without food or water, this prayer they were singing, this last Pope prayer of the Hopi people, we were told. They arrived a couple of minutes before, after we, the two of us, thinking we're on some spiritual mission from the Rainbow Gathering, we're standing at each side of the entranceway. These Kachinas passed through us. We heard felt something eerie, and looked around and looked at each other and recognized something eerie. Then we gradually, when they came closer, we heard them. Then they went there. I did a couple of directions doing a thing, and then the church bell rang to the Mennonite church. So that was our cue to take, I wanted to take this Bible student, the guy, to hear the same rap I had heard with Carolyn the week before, to compare the prophecies about the return of Jesus Christ. So after a couple of rounds, we noticed the clowns were very, very different, treating these two Kachinas. We didn't know anything about it at the time, called morning Kachinas, and the clowns wouldn't even face them. They were so sacred. So when the church bells rang, we went to the church a little ways away from where the Kachina dance was happening. And as soon as I touched the handle of the church, lightning and thunder happened. And the rain came right away. And I forgot to say that morning, which is the 18th, I believe, the Sunday of July, the morning was on a camp. He showed up at my camp and stayed a day and disappeared, this guy James. But in the morning, a beautiful double rainbow happened, like lasted 20 minutes. Then we walked a mile to the Kachina dance area. He wanted to meet Banyaka, but he wasn't home. So we went to the Kachina dance and had that experience. Then we went to the church, lightning and thunder. As soon as I touched the door, went in there. I was still wearing my red lab coat, but he didn't know about the symbol. But I went in, the pastor may not have, but he took us again to lunch, and him and James talked about all his prophecies about the return of Jesus Christ, what was going to happen when, And I was amazed, because I'm not a Bible student, they agreed point by point all the things that were going to happen. I was blown away. So much so that afterwards I went to a Pentecostal church in Flagstaff, or no, some outlying area, and went forward and spoke in tongues. I spoke the surah from Arabic that I learned as a boy, 18 years old, when I embraced Islam. The surah talks about the God does not beget and does not begotten. That means, talked about this with my son recently, the weird thing between Islam and Christianity is Christianity talks about Jesus as the Son of God, but never is the Son a small letter. It's always capitalized, meaning that it's a metaphor. The Son of God is a metaphor. Doesn't mean Jesus is the Son of a God, like a carnal relationship, some dude named God fathered a child with a woman named Mary, kind of thing. That's what, because in Arabic, there's no small letters and capital letters. It's all the same. So that's where the confusion comes, when the Muslim think it's blasphemous to say Jesus is Son of God. It's a language problem, mixed up, mistaken. It's a metaphor that means. So anyway, I went to and went forward to accept Jesus Christ after that experience in Hope Then. Meanwhile, Carolyn had gone back to Santa Barbara. She missed her kids, and they later came back. And we finished the ceremony with the full moon, new moon in August. Then we went back to Santa Barbara, and what I read, but from Thomas Banyaka, the four-page letter he wrote from there were four interpreters commissioned to bring out the Hopi. Thomas called it Hopi prophecy, but the Hopi life plan message to the world, to English. But the only one is these four elders who commissioned, who's the had the traditional authority as the Coyote clan, the messenger clan, was Thomas. He went all around the world to give this message. And he rendered at the second meeting in 1960, December, he rendered the teaching in writing in a four-page letter. And I was scratching my head over this message in the Hopi land. The summer of 76, couldn't figure out what it meant, the helper with, if I'm supposed to be the true white brother, let's say, representing this energy, and bringing many inventions because of the science thing I had developed. So, if that's my role, you know, theoretically, directed by this fire sign to dye a lab coat red as a chemist. What I'm supposed to, it said two helpers are supposed to come. One helper has the sign of the sun. Other helper has two symbols. One looks like a four-leaf clover, and one looks like a swastika. And it says that the first one, the true one, is supposed to join with the second helper with these two symbols and join with the first helper with the sign of the sun and bring purification. And the purification means purifying the mind of the people to overcome this disorder, that this out of harmony that with a natural order. So purification has to happen. Well, I scratched my head and couldn't figure it out. Then we went back to Santa Barbara. And then what happens? The Japanese Buddhist monks, Fuji Gurujis people, show up at the place we're living, Dharma Home. They'd walk all cross country that year, and a friend of mine of ours brought him the monks, a couple of the monks went to Santa Barbara, and the one monk we met was, what's your name? Masao Napashi means a political man, he first said, and a rainbow. Napashi means rainbow. Later years, I've learned from his daughter that Masao means warrior as well. So Warrior of the Rainbow was his name in English. That's the name of the book that we read the Hopi Prophecy teaching in. And Masao sounds like Masao, similar sound, the Hopi word for the Great Spirit. All these coincidences have plagued me and motivate me, but I can't do anything about it. So the Guruji's people beat the drum and chant this mantra, Namo Myo Horenge Kyo. Well, we asked this, this was in December of 1976, after our trip to the Hopi Land. We asked, what does it mean, why you beat the drum? Well, they explained it's a self-purification prayer to purify the mind of the people. Bingo. That and this helper with the sign of the sun was the Namo Myo Horenge Kyo. That wording of this document was that the second helper should join with the first helper to bring purification. That means the chanting the Namo Myo Horenge Kyo together. So this makes sense, I guess, that they also, Guruji was the guy who began the revival of Buddhism in India, and Mahatma Gandhi took up the drum and the mantra, the chanting of this prayer every day, and to lead the spiritual revolution in India to success. So here we're December of 1976, trying to figure this out. And we both did a little beating the drum and chanting to practice this, see what happened. And each year, the first year of the first week of December, the monks chant all day, sunrise to sunset, beating the drum, chanting this prayer, and fasting. So he asked me, Napashi, why don't you fast with me for one day? Well, he could fast for 7 days. I never did fasting. I thought, heck, I can do it one day. So I beat the drum all day and chanted the prayer. The seventh day of his fasting. And I had a big revelation. I can't explain it, but I have a cosmic revelation of what it's all about. You can't experience, you can't talk about it, you have to experience it. So after that, I started walking around town with him beating the drum, dumpster diving, and we had 3 days fasting and beating the drum all day, a couple of times in the early months of 1977, which he wrote to Guruji saying, hey, this crazy guy, American guy, is already fasting and beating the drum. It was big news that I had done this, accepted it. But they thought, I guess, was because I would wanted to be a Buddhist, or I thought maybe I knew something. I never studied the Buddhist scripture because I was taught you don't have to. All you have to do is beat the drum and chant this mantra and you'll get everything. You don't have to read this Lotus Sutra book. It starts with, you're not going to understand this, but read it anyway. I couldn't deal with that. My reason for chanting was because it fulfilled the Hopi prophecy I was taught, the helper with the sign of the sun, and the prayer to bring purification. They couldn't understand it, I guess. I don't know. So, you know, by March or so, I've been met some of the monks and the Japanese monks. Minamatsu wanted me to take them to Hopi land because Guruji was becoming aware that the Indian people, the Native American people, survived. He thought they were all dead. So he sent Minamatsu to meet Dennis Banks. And Minamatsu went to see Dennis at Lee Brightman's house, but Dennis didn't want to see him. So Minamatsu said, okay, I have to beat the drum and fast until I die, or I meet Dennis. That's what my orders from my master are. That's the guidance these people have. So he met Dennis Banks. Dennis Banks realized this guy, Guruji, he met many years ago with Dennis, was a guard and the Marine Corps at the embassy. All these monks came on a big demonstration to the embassy, and they are under orders to shoot to kill. Dennis, being an Indian guy, he looks at these monks and says, I'm not going to shoot them. What's going on? He remembered that incident with Guruji. And then at Harbin Springs, the same place that we dyed our lab coats, I didn't know when Longest Walk came I didn't know. I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but 1978, the longest walk happened. See, Nippashi went back to Japan in the spring to prepare for the Tokyo to Hiroshima Peace Walk in August. And that when he left, another monk I walked with, Carolyn and I walked with around town. The Karmapa showed up. The Tibetan Karmapa was doing a ceremony. The Black Hat ceremony is called. A refuge, accepting a refuge in the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. And he had a ceremony to offer. So we went there. And lo and behold, on a tapestry, the tanka by his where he was sitting, there's exactly the symbols the Hopi prophecy talked about, in the letter from Thomas. The letter is reproduced on my website. All these documents that relate to Hopi, you can go to Global Emergency Alert Response, hyphenated, Global Emergency Alert Response .net. And if you put a slash and a TB, like Thomas Banyaka, TB, Hopi, .html, you'll see this, all this information as well as the Hopi Declaration of Peace, which he gave us in May 28, 1976. I must have read it 100 times. Very influential. And one of the symbols on the Global Peace Fall for Jerusalem, the Hopi Declaration of Peace. So the Karmapa symbols were the second helper, the swastika and the double dorje. It looks like a four-leaf clover. Many times the Hopi tried to get with the Dalai Lama. Maybe he's the one who read and had some symbols and carved in the rocks. It was liaison between Thomas and Yamato a bunch of times to the Dalai Lama. Finally, we got to go to Arizona. The Dalai Lama says, "Oh, okay, we'll meet again, but we're not going to talk about this Hopi prophecy thing anymore. It's a done deal. It's closed." The Dalai Lama says, "I'm not the one that the true white brother with red, and that kind of thing." So, but that's the chronology of how I became aware and experientially the learning of how the Buddhism, Buddhist Buddhism, Namo Myoho Renge-kyo, purification prayer, how it ties in to the Native American, the Hopi prophecy and all that. I'm maybe crazy, but it's true. And if somebody, all these years I've been background, I'm not a big talker. I'm not an ego tripper to say I'm this and that. I just try to do something good, and I'm trying to bring out this message of the scientific basis for this great love, peace, which we got to pay attention to heal the earth and have peace. And that's part of my story about how I arrived at this conclusion. But in 1974, when I went to first to UCSB to apply for the PhD program and do a thesis about unified field theory, I formulated three equations, but I knew I didn't have the whole picture yet, so I had to learn something yet to figure it out. And then April 28th, 1977, the month after where Nippachi went back to Japan, I was walking across town 12 miles to university from Montecito, and I was marveling at this prayer I learned. I was practicing then, beating the drum, was a similar cadence to the prayer I learned from Islam when I embraced Islam as the second Anglo-American member of the Los Angeles Mosque under the tutelage of my friend who went on to teach the Quran, Jim Waldron. Brilliant guy. We learned Arabic and music, all this. He tutored in me of the principles of Islam. No, you know, just directly. I accepted the faith at the time, but at the essence of the faith of prayer, La ilaha illallah, means there's no God but the one God. Namum yohar engye kyo, it's same concept, seven syllables. The second beat is a half beat. And so when I was walking, when I thought, it's too trippy, I have to try this. So one time I changed and said, La ilaha illallah, when all day walking, beating the drum, saying, Namam yoho ringikyo. One time I changed that and said this Islamic prayer. And instantly I got a huge revelation to complete my fourth equation, which I call the oneness equation, means the absolute identity of observer and observed. That absolute identity is a concept of oneness. It's represented by four lines, and now normal math, the equals function is two lines. This equals that, represented by two lines. In math, all is another function besides two lines is three lines, and you read that is defined identically equal to. So the first three equations of my unified theory, field theory, tetron, all definitional identity equations, redefining terms, redefining the relationship between observer and observed, and then as a consequence of the nature of light, as a consequence of the C squared and E equals MC squared. There's each of the three, first three equations are definitional identity equations. The fourth one is absolute identity equation. This is a new invention, but it's a principle all throughout every religion. Everything is the oneness principle, that the oneness behind everything. That's one of the teachings from Yamato too, the oneness principle. I meant to speak a lot more about him and I have another half hour on the explain more about Reverend Yamato. He's unique because he's not the Guruji's order, Nipponzan Myohoji. Guruji is the initiator of that order, maybe the smallest Nichiren sect, all of the which chant the Dhamma Myoho Renge-kyo. But Yamato was raised because he's born in 1946, so it was a poor time in Japan. He was he didn't get to be raised with his sisters because they were poor. So he was raised by his grandmother. Nothing wrong with that, but that's how it had to be. And so his grandmother was a real religious person. Kind of like Guruji's was similar, his upbringing with his mother and grandmother was a religious upbringing. But so Yamato's grandmother was a disciple of Fuji Guruji. So Yamato's grandmother beat the drum and did the chanting prayer. So when Yamato, Japanese young guy, he took up the drum from his grandmother and he became a monk in but not Guruji's follower. He had three names, monk names that I know of. The first was Nichiren school, Nichido. This powerful name, Sun Wei, Do, Dao, Sun, Nichi. Then the next name, he is Shatsu lineage, Sion Yamato, I think. And the last one, after the long war for survival, he went back to Japan and he reordained another time, subjugated himself for 5 years to another master, to a Zen master, one of the biggest, oldest Zen temples in Japan. He became took on the name of Yamato, a Dharma name, which means great harmony. So before Japan became Japan, it was Japan, and the name is Portuguese, means Japan, like lacquerware, but their name was Nihon, meaning the origin of the sun. That's when the nation of Japan started, but before that, it was Yamato, the whole land of great harmony. And that only changed between the northern and the southern emperor when the militarization happened to defend from the Portuguese and the gunpowder weapons and all. That's the time when Nichiren came in, saying, "You guys are messing up, making a law against gravity," kind of thing. But so Yamato has this powerful name, and the lineage of the Zen temple, meaning each master from the guys that came to Japan, each teacher picks one of his disciples to pass the lineage on. And they sign the paper with their blood and they transfer the lineage. Well, Yamato's received the lineage of this temple, but a big secret, so I can't talk about much, but he's a powerful guy, but he's not not Guruji's disciple, but all the people follow the sutra, want to build the peace pagoda, which is the extension of the peace pole. It's a monument. King Ashoka also built many monument stupas, enshrining a bit of the Buddha's ashes. The human being, Shakyamuni, when he died, he said, burn his body and scatter the ashes and enshrine them in peace pagodas around the world that will bring peace, he said. So all around the world where you see these stupas, each one has a bit of Buddha's ashes, this guy, ground up and enshrined in this monument. Well, Yamato's mission is to build a peace pagoda in Taos to help bring peace that way. So I wanted to support that and help. One idea he's put forward is to build a stupa, a small one, at the Rio Grande Gorge, because when I was there a couple of years ago, well, people committed suicide jumping up the gorge, and the Tibetans had a green tar ceremony and made a prayer to help eliminate the suicides. And Yamato wanted to help them propose to build a stupa, a small one at the edge of the gorge. But they're looking for land to build the peace pagoda. There's already a couple of small ones in Taos, but he wants one with his energy, with the carrying the ancient lineage of Yamato. I want to help support that. And the reason I'm I'm supporting Yamato is because he was the one who brought first the time the peace pole to the rainbow gatherings. In 77 was my first rainbow gathering. I didn't think I would be able to go, but one of the Japanese Buddhist monks, one of the Guruji's followers, was taking a busload of people to the east to Katoshone to start his mission to build the peace pagoda. He wound up building the New England peace pagoda. And they showed up at the L.A. temple and saw that I wanted to go to the rainbow gathering. And so one guy jumped off the bus and put me on, and I went to the my first rainbow gathering in 1977 with Katoshone, the Buddhist monk who built the stupa in New England. And we had the experience that time, including witnessing the double rainbow half hour where the people were chanting rainbow, rainbow, while Grandfather David Manange was talking about the Hopi prophecy at that time. And I didn't know, we didn't know that he was there, what that happened at the time, at the, exactly the time frame what was going on. So then next day, the next year, the longest walk happened, and Guruji himself was coming to join the longest walk. And what happened in 1977 at the Tokyo to Hiroshima Peace Walk, Minamatsu had met Dennis in the interim, in the mid-months of 77. And then Dennis couldn't leave the California because he's on the Governor Brown's protection. So he sent Lee Brotman to Japan, who met with Guruji and witnessed the Tokyo Hiroshima Peace Walk. And out of that grew the commitment to do the longest walk. And when Guruji came to the longest walk in 1978 to the first of the L.A. Temple, we were there preparing to go to join the walk in the east. But what happened was they said after the ceremony, "Are you going to go to the hospice?" They were asking me if we wanted to go to the hot springs, but understand the dialect saying hot springs. So Guruji was going to the Harbin Hot Springs, the same place that Carolyn and I had dyed the lab coats red, the same place that Timothy Leary had dosed 25 police at Harbin Springs. Guruji was going to Harbin Springs with the 25 monks to have a hot springs and to meet Dennis Banks and Thomas Pinaka, who was arranged for them to meet with the Guruji the first time. The Hopi were, Thomas was not a fan of the American Indian movement because of their violence. But he, Guruji, introduced Dennis Banks and Thomas Pinaka and mellowed out, and American Indian movement accepted Guruji's message. Dennis Banks took up the drum and the mantra, the prayer, just like Gandhi did from Guruji, just like I did and many others subsequently have taken up this prayer, this mantra. But at Harbin Springs, we didn't know they were going to hot springs. I thought they were saying Guruji is going to the hospital. Well, I didn't know anything about it and didn't want to go to hospital. So we just shined on. We're getting ready for the trip to the longest walk. But it turned out Yamato, his at that time he was not an ordained monk. He's a Ikeyana practitioner, meaning one vehicle, the Lanka Sutta, the last teaching of Buddha, no monks, only build the peace pagodas, the Lanka Sutra. He's a Ikeyana called one vehicle, Mahayana, Hinayana. He was an Ikeyana, one vehicle practitioner, a long-haired hippie kind of guy. Then he got the bad rap because some of his friends brought LSD to the Harbin Springs And the those the Guruji, 25 monks got the LSD dose, and the Guruji think I'm the stories I was told was that I wasn't there, but was that it had gone on some days, somebody knew something was up, so when they toasted the sake, Guruji had a twinkle in his eye. He knew what was going on, so he knowingly took this LSD because they wanted to see what the master would say, right? That's what the deal was. All along his long career, he's 90-some years old. The monks in Japan, his temples have been smoking ganja with the parishioners, and all kinds of problems with government and everything going on in India. So, but he never said anything, you know, never criticized. But after the LSD experience, they waited to see what Guruji was going to say. And my understanding from the translation I get was that he said, yesterday it seemed somebody tried to poison me, but it wasn't poison, but it created a dream. And the dream is not our dream of world peace. It's a different kind of dream. And it's not productive for our cause, our mission, to create world peace. So therefore, we should not do these things, this drugs and that. And so he instantly, after the experience, made a hard decision. No monks anymore, his ordained monks, should smoke ganja. No monks should take LSD. So the guy that brought the monks to us had to give back his drum because he wanted to smoke ganja. But when we went to the longest walk end time a month later, that was a hot topic. Oh, Guruji changed his mind. He's against the smoking ganja. He's against LSD now because of his experience. So what happened? My teacher, Nipashi, his teacher, called Yagashoni, he was a heavy into the ganja thing. He offered his life. He committed ritual suicide because of that, because of the change in Guruji's message to stop drugs and LSD. So Yamato is a bad reputation because they think he was responsible for that episode, the Japanese hippies. And Yamato, as a Zen monk, has used the LSD and gave me some at the Oregon, the Arizona gathering when we did the Peace Bowl there. But the big thing is, he brought the peace pole. When I first saw the concept of the peace pole, was a simple pole with the calligraphy of Namo Myoho-Renge-Kyo on it, and they put it up and pray in the hope of the peace pagoda is going to be built someday. But the Yamato had a Ikeana mind, one vehicle. His message was a ecumenical peace movement, ecumenical peace pole. So not only he put the Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, but he invited other people to put their symbols on it for peace. And then 2 years, 78 in Oregon, and next year in Arizona, we had the peace pole ceremony, the pageant working through the camps and put it up and had a ceremony. And the next year, he was going to be the coordinator for Long Walks for Survival, so he wouldn't be at the Rainbow Gathering. And he asked me to help create the peace pole, because I went to West Virginia to try to do that, but I didn't have experience creating one. I didn't know the dead tree or live tree, so I prayed about it, waited, and then too late in the cycle. But one day, a lightning and wind knocked down a tree, a perfect sized tree next to the information booth at the West Virginia gathering. So we made that into the peace pole, but nobody was hip to doing a ceremony. So we left it in the woods, thinking when the Long Walk for Survival comes in November, we'll look in the woods for this peace pole and, bring it out. Well, when we went back to Long Walk for Survival end time, that had disappeared. So my friend Wave and I stayed up all night and made another peace pole, blank log, scraped the bark off of it, put the war leader Kachina symbol, the Hopi symbol, burned it in the bottom, then put that in the Long War for Survival end ceremony, the White House, with Crow Dog, Chief Crow Dog, giving us the permission, and Guruji sending a monk to put the Namo Myoho Renge calligraphy on it. Then Wave and his brother, beautiful artist Reed, put carvings on it, symbols of peace. Then that peaceful, 1980 peaceful, went all the way to 2016. Many hundreds of thousands of people prayed for peace with this peaceful until it wore out and Felipe had to burn it. And then I was taken aback because all the time people were cherishing this log with a bunch of pretty carvings on it and making a big deal out of it. And it was creating a controversy at the Rainbow Gathering because some people liked the peace pole and some people thought it was an idol and that kind of thing. So all kinds of arguments happened. And my view was that it's not the beautiful carvings and the pole itself, as nice as it is, the essence. The essence is a message it stands for. It's like a road sign that points the direction to peace. So after 2013, cherished peaceful was burned up, I figured out we'll have to create a new one. So I started with using the Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, the three symbols. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, the Great Law of Peace symbol, and the Hopi Declaration of Peace. And then I called that the Rainbow Uprising Peace Pole. And after the Rainbow Uprising of Consciousness campaign that we started with Hopi interpreter Thomas Bayaka and Jake Swamp in 1990, means the uprising of consciousness to a higher level to see the solutions to the problems of today. I mean, the Arabic word for intifada doesn't mean rising, like throwing rocks. It's a spiritual uprising of consciousness to a higher level to see the solutions. Intifada, that's what the guy who came to Santa Barbara, the head of the Palestinian Center for Nonviolence, explained. That's the same thing Einstein said, that we can't solve the current problems with the current level of thinking. We have to uprise our consciousness to a higher level to see the solutions to the problems of the day. That's what's behind this principle, the Rainbow Uprising campaign, that some prominent people at the Rainbow Gatherings have been around a long time are against it, fighting me about the Hopi message of Rainbow Uprising of Consciousness. They're fighting me. They didn't like it. I don't know, but so I took the Rainbow Uprising peace pole with those three symbols, painted it with rainbow colors, and took it to Sacramento for the Occupy gathering one time. I offered it to Jerry Brown to put in the lawn of the Capitol as a symbol of peace, because Yamato and I had met Jerry Brown when he was the mayor of Oakland before he was mayor. But again, when he was mayor, he gave us a proclamation. We went to have tea, talked about the global peace walk coming. Would he support it? He said yes. That's when we met Jerry Brown. So I talked to Governor Jerry Brown, trying to get him to accept the peace pole. And he wouldn't do it. I don't know if it gets through to him from the secretary or not, but they arrested the peace pole. The cops took it away. I wouldn't budge. I wouldn't move it. I let them take it. And the only thing was arrested that year at the Occupy National Gathering was the peace pole. That was the sacrifice. But so that didn't work, the Rainbow Uprising peace pole. So after I met Jose Munoz and talked about in 2015, I think it was, he talked about the prophecy or teaching about the Mayan Jade Princess and all. I invited him and the mayor to have a ceremony of the peace tree of peace on campus, to bring the prayer and the upgrade the peace pool. So we put the symbol for the three faces of Jerusalem United on it. Mayor Murillo put it on there. And we put the Sai Baba symbol, Satya Sai Baba's spiritual unity of all faiths, and the Mayan calendar symbol for peace, love, and patience. One of the 25 archetype symbols, including five new ones from the 26,000-year calendar starting December 21st, 2012. We put that on there with Jose's all after the ceremony. Then I try to see, is that going to work? So I carried that Peace Bowl to the Rainbow Uprising people, Peace Bowl with the three symbols. I carried to the Rainbow Gathering in Vermont. And then nobody cared about it. Now, it's still the resistance of the Rainbow Uprising concept. Then the next one, I took the, I called it the Global Peace Pole for Jerusalem because it has the symbol of Mayor Pond on it. I took it to the Georgia Rainbow Gathering and had it displayed in the special Tent of David structure, human high thing I mentioned earlier. I displayed, created a straw model of the golden metallic straw model of the same shape that fit over a person's head like a crown, the King of a Jerusalem crown, the crown that Jesus would have on his head, meaning symbolically the King of Jerusalem. What I'm practicing about, that concept, I gave that crown to one. I took the peace pole to the White House, offered it to President Trump. He never accepted it. I beat the drum out there. And the United Nations, we had a gathering, created a 10-point peace plan, delivered it, came back to Taos. Yamato was not so interested. Ho-hum. I planted the peace pole at the Taos Gorge Bridge with Joe Stoops, with the permission of Bureau of Land Management. We left that peace pole there. And I came back and delivered the crown of straws, I call it, to the end ceremony for Jose Munoz at Mayan Calendar Dreamcatcher Human Manifestation Station, last ceremony in December 2018. I made it back in time and left that crown of straws there, thinking someday a ceremony will take place where that crown of straws will be used to symbolize that fulfillment of the return of Jesus Christ. That may be this year in the Lucidity Festival, if he puts the crown of straws on somebody, that'll be it. Okay, Torah kum, Torah namu myoho inge kyo. Le ilahe illallah. Le ilahe illallah namu myoho inge kyo. Torah, Torah kum. This is the end of the fifth session of the Great Planetary Peace Pilgrimage podcast. This is David Williams signing off, talking about Yamato and his hell. This year, I'll explain it more in writing, but we want to coordinate these things, the Global Peace Walk and the Great Planetary Pilgrimage in Taos and Santa Fe. Thank you. Love you all.